it's really extraordinary seeing the perspective of a lot of young people that are very impressionable that come out of universities and have an utter complete disdain for these successful societies. And instead of looking at these successful societies and saying, well, yeah, people were really terrible in the past, but this is a pretty good example of how people should be treated equally today. No, it's not perfect, but it's progressing in a better direction than it was in the past, right? Instead, they look to the past and everything is built on this horrible history of outrageous, atrocious acts, and therefore it must be punished currently. And all the people that benefited from it, specifically white people, need to be cast out. They need to be silenced. Multiculturalism is the only way to go. Complete open borders. Like the way they look at things is like, how do you think these countries got so good? Like, what do you think is about America or about England, about any of these countries that leads them to be where they are today? Well, it's a long history of progress, a long history, and along the way, yeah, like especially people everywhere, you know, humans are just getting better at being people like pretty recently. But to throw it all out and abandon it and to think that socialism is going to fix you, like do you guys read anything? There's not a single example of that not turning to tyranny. And their take on it is always it hasn't been done correctly. And that is so wild that people are still willing to swallow that. And the only thing that makes sense is they've been indoctrinated through universities to think this way. Because nowhere in the real world do you think that equality of outcome ever makes any sense. Because everybody realizes somewhere along the line, when you get your first job, when you're a kid, when you're going through school, when you're playing sports, there's not equality of effort. There's never a quality of effort. And there's always some people that want to put in more effort and they're put in more thought and more focus and they get further. Are you sure that's everything? Because it seems like it's not. And it seems like as soon as you remove any incentive to succeed, then you don't have any of the amazing stuff that you have around you all the time. The reason why you have beautiful televisions and Starlink and all that, it's capitalism. It's you have to incentivize people to create these things.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean not correct. It can be done correctly. It can be done humanely. It can be done wisely. You could vote with your dollars. You could, you know, boycott companies that do things that you don't think are ethical. There's all sorts of wonderful ways that capitalism could be used and you can sort of influence things in the right direction. But to throw it all out and say we've got to go socialism, like, oh, boy, I can't believe people are buying that. That to me is one of the real problems with not allowing conservative voices in universities. And that these universities, especially in the United States, are a lot of, especially like in sociology, psychology, and the overwhelmingly liberal. Like surely there's got to be some historians out there that are conservative and they would have a different perspective. And it might be good to have diversity of opinion, as well as diversity of national origin, as well as diversity of gender, as well as diversity of sexual orientation. Yeah, all that stuff's great. But also diversity of opinion.
Yeah.
Like the only way to know whether or not this person's making sense is to have someone who completely disagrees, that has a better point, go up against them and you watch them duke it out. And as soon as you silence all that because students don't feel safe or because, you know, this is promoting X, Y, and Z, this person's a Nazi. Oh, they're a Nazi. We can't let them on. As soon as you do that, you ruin the whole thing that a university is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be preparing young minds for discourse and for communicating and for figuring out the world on their own. They're eventually going to be independent and dependent entirely on their own actions and decisions and go out there in the world, figure out your way. Arm them correctly. And the way to do that is to expose them to all sorts of different competing ideas. The idea that that was ever accepted to be shut down in this country, especially in America, is a massive failure of the education system. Just massive. If you think that someone has bad points, come up with better points and let them duke it out. And don't pull fire alarms and don't silence them and don't scream and protest and throw things at them. Communicate. This is what and anybody who doesn't do that should be shunned.
fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the alicejonesstore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did.
Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the alexjonesstore.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. Third hour is on. We still have a lot to talk about. We'll probably move away here a little bit from Israel, but not too far, but not really. But actually, we're probably going to stay on it for a little bit because there's a lot more still to cover. I do want to tell you, however, that we have a new product at the Alex Jones Store, thealexjonesstore.com. It is the Ultimate Turmeric Tincture. If you have been a fan of InfoWars and Alex Jones Network products for a while, you know some of our best-selling, most popular products are turmeric-based, and that's a very good reason for that. Turmeric is an incredible anti-inflammatory, and the way that we extract it, the way that we, you know, get the turmeric, we maximize the curcuminoids, which are the active ingredient in the turmeric, meaning that, you know, you can take one little dropper of ours, and it's the equivalent of an entire bottle of another brand. The gold standard of turmeric has arrived. It is the new Ultimate Turmeric Tincture, one of the most advanced liquid turmeric formulas we've ever offered at thealexjonesstore.com. This fast-absorbing liquid tincture is formulated with premium turmeric root, standardized for 95% curcuminoids. Standardized to 95% curcuminoids, the most powerful and extensively studied active compounds found in turmeric. We've combined it with ginger root and black pepper extract to help dramatically increase absorption so your body can make the most of every serving. Unlike ordinary turmeric supplements, this premium liquid formula is designed for superior absorption and maximum bioavailability. No fillers, no junk, just real ingredients that work together. Each little bottle has 60 servings. Ultimate Turmeric Tincture is formulated to support healthy joints, mobility, antioxidant defense, digestive health, and your body's healthy inflammatory response as part of a healthy lifestyle. And right now, when you subscribe, you'll get an incredible 50% off. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and get the new Ultimate Turmeric Tincture. Take control of your health, support the broadcast, and experience the difference premium fast-absorbing turmeric can make. And, you know, whether it was the old product Bodies or anything else, I know turmeric works. Like, I know from personal experience how well turmeric works in my own life and my own personal experience, you know, being sore from working out or, you know, playing sports or whatever. I would always go to turmeric, take advantage of the curcuminoids. You can do it yourself by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Subscribe for 50% off the Ultimate Turmeric Supplement, Ultimate Turmeric Tincture, now available at thealexjonesstore.com. Let's keep talking about Israel, shall we? Let's go to clip 36 here, because this is what we need to be doing. This is the beginning, an effective start to a campaign of opposition to the takeover of America by Israel. And it starts with regular people like you standing up and speaking out against this hostile, genocidal foreign state. Let's watch. Audio.
Else's military, but we don't have money for ourselves and our needs. And as it applies directly to Israel on this one, yeah, I feel for the Israeli people, but y'all keep electing the Likud party. And it ain't just Netanyahu. Smotrich, not a good dude. Ben-Gavir, these guys celebrate slaughtering people. We're not okay with that. We're not supporting that. If Israel wants to get serious about getting peace in the Middle East, it starts but stop the encouragement of these settlements. Why are we funding, why are we allowing them to fund these settlements? That's not operating in good faith. You're the more powerful entity here. You make the first concession showing that we're being serious and we want this. And we're going to do that by not having these settlers keep taking your territory, harassing you, just being everything they encounter, Hamas is being, that's how they're behaving. I'll be honest, as an American, how would we behave if we were treated the way the Palestinians were? Are we just going to tolerate that? No, we'd be standing up. We'd be outraged. We'd be rebelling. Hamas doesn't represent all the Palestinian folks, just the way the Black Coup Party doesn't represent all the Israeli folks. But they got choices, and they're choosing to support people like Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. And I'm not okay with them. I'm sure not cool with funding them. I'm sure not cool with Mossad continually spying on us and trying to influence our elections and influence our populace. The MAGA has missed a key couple letters in their America First. It should be Americans first, the people. Thank you all.
So I thought that was absolutely fantastic. That just goes to show, I mean, being informed is what you need, you know, because they'll try to, you know, distract you. Well, they're just defending ourselves. But if you can go, well, here's what Ben-Gvir says. Here's what Smotrich says. Here's what Netanyahu says. Here's what they do. And I love, and how many times have I said that exact thing? I'm just like, what would you do if you were the Palestinians? This was always the strangest thing. Is you got these good old boys, like Texas dudes, that just be like, them Palestinians need to know their place. It's like, what are you talking about? You're the person with who's like, they, you know, from my cold, dead hands, they'll come try to take my guns, or they try that here, they'll see some good old boys get up to some stuff. And it's like, would you, though? Would you carry on a rebellion for 80 years against overwhelming odds? Would you actually carry on a seemingly hopeless resistance for four generations? Because America's being taken over right now. And you're not doing anything about it, so it's just obscene. It really is. Now I got one more video, and we won't go to the whole thing, and I don't even know if it's worth it to go to, but I do think it's a fascinating piece of insight from Glenn Beck, and I think it's weird hearing, especially somebody like Glenn Beck, talk like this. He's basically laying out what the new strategy in Iran is, and it's like the most evil thing I've ever heard. It's crazy. And it's crazy that this is coming from, you know, Glenn Beck, who, say what you want about him, has always come across to me as a very sincere, like, family man, and while I think his positions are absurd, and especially his position on Israel is cucked beyond imagination, but he seems sincere, he seems faithful, he seems like a genuine good person, which is why it's so weird to hear him supporting what is in many ways the most evil possible outcome of all of this. Let's go to Glenn Beck here, clip 40. Here's Glenn Beck explaining the best card the Trump administration has to play when it comes to this war in Israel, in Iran. Let's watch.
Yesterday, I told you that Donald Trump is hunting. He is actually hunting for something in Iran. And he's not hunting for a moderate. He is not hunting for a good man. He is hunting for an Albert Speer. You don't know who Albert Speer is? He was a good friend of Hitler. He was the architect for Hitler. A really bad guy, just escaped the noose in the Nuremberg trials because, in the end, he was the guy that Hitler said, I want you to do the Nero Doctrine, which was burn everything down in Germany. The German people have betrayed us, and the West is not going to get their hands on anything, so burn it all to the ground. And Albert Speer wanted to survive. He knew this was over. You know, it was 4 weeks from the end, and he was talking to Hitler, and he's like, I don't think that's a good idea. You'll do it. Yes, sir, I will. And then he didn't. He actually became a roadblock, and that's why he escaped the noose in the end. So that's what he's looking for, okay? Now, the question is, what are the odds that this is going to work? What if this doesn't work? What happens if there's nobody there to find? So let's start where we actually stand, because it has moved since the beginning of this thing. The bombs have already fallen. Ali Khamenei is dead now, killed in the opening strike back in February. His son, apparently he's alive. No real proof of that, but installed inside of 10 days by the Revolutionary Guard that wanted its own man in the chair before anybody could argue. There's now a signed memorandum, 60-day clock, oil moving through Hormuz again. And the thing that started all of this, the enriched uranium, is still in the ground. It's buried under sites that we cratered, but we did not empty it. The stockpile is the whole game. Everything else is scenery here. So the spear that we need, the Albert spear that we need, is now very, very specific. It's not a defector with a conscience. Whatever or whoever is inside that battered structure decides to hand over the uranium and let inspectors prove that it's gone is what we're looking for. Now, here's why it may not work. So far, we don't see a lot of wavering from China and Russia, the patrons of Iran. Putin has pledged unwavering support for the son within days. Beijing warned everybody, hands off. However, that has decayed since the trip with Donald Trump. He made some real good moves with Beijing, and he is in talks with Moscow now. And I'm not sure how solid their support for Iran really is. But as long as Moscow and Beijing look like they're going to catch the regime if it falls, nobody on the inside of that regime is going to wake up and conclude that the ship is sinking. Because if he's got Beijing and he's got Moscow, it's not going anywhere. The man at the very top is the wrong man to reach for. A hardliner who lost his wife and his felon family in the strike. They made him the leader. He's promised vengeance. This is not hard arithmetic, okay? But the 60-day clock cuts both ways. It pressures the regime, but it also gives regime time to find its own wavering men and shoot them. That's the other thing that I think the Trump administration is looking for. Are they shooting anyone inside of the team? Now, I've been going over this in the last week, and I've been doing a lot of thinking of this, and I'm like, wow, is this really the best card that we have? I mean, is this it? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Because all alternatives are worse.
All right, we can take it out. So do you get what he said? He's literally like, we need to find the worst person in Iran. Our victory depends on paying a defector, like paying a traitor, basically. Our one hope, because actually what he's laying out here is how we lost the war in Iran, that Russia and China are backing them up, that they have no reason to capitulate, that our murder of Khamenei actually resulted in more hardliners taking power. And he's like, our one hope is finding the biggest, scummiest dirtbag in Iran to be a traitor on our behalf. And it's like, is it time to look in the mirror? Is it, are we the baddies time yet? Is it time to look in the mirror and wonder, why do we have a skull on our helmet? Well, why are we the ones desperately looking for somebody of low enough character to betray his countrymen so that we can get victory? Are we maybe the bad guys in all of this? And even he kind of admits it, where he's like, you know, he brings up Albert Speer and he brings up this, you know, circumstance where it's like he's ordered to do something outrageous and obscene and he can't do it. And out of conscience, his own conscience, he you know, betrays his government because he's not going to kill his own people. And Glenbeck puts that forward as an example and then is like, but we don't want somebody like that. We want somebody who's of low character, who will sell out their country for us. That's who we want on our team and on our side, because he recognizes that the Iranians are not doing insane things that, you know, you would have a moral, you know, repugnance for. Maybe we need an Israel. Maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need somebody in the Israeli government who actually has a conscience to, never mind. Now, I realize the problem now. All right, we'll move on. We'll move on now. But, you know, like I said, I think that's a smart, like, I think Glenn Beck is, like, you know, connected to the people making these decisions. I think that is a very accurate reading of our current situation. I just think we're the bad guys. And I think when our only solution, other than just, you know, the other solution would just be to go home, right? We could just end the war at any point. It would be humiliating and Israel would pay a price, but we could at any point. We wouldn't suffer really at all. In fact, we could maybe make agreements and deals with Iran and they would be a better partner for us than Israel ever was, but not with the people we have currently in our government. That's never going to happen. So short of that, then yeah, the only option we have is to try to find somebody in Iran who will betray his own government. And it's like, this is terrible. This is just what have we become? What has Israel made America into? Just villains, just absolute unrepentant villains across the board. Now I'm thinking we should, let's do this. We'll get into voting here. We'll go to clip 24 first. Thomas Massie pointing out what we keep saying about the Republican Party and, you know, passing the SAVE Act and doing anything for the American people. Here's Thomas Massie on the real problem that Republicans face right now.
I think it's ironic that we control the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the White House, and we're yelling election fraud. I mean, we won all the damn elections, and we're in charge, and what are we doing with it? We're bankrupting the country, we're starting new wars, we're violating the Constitution, we're not cracking down on the fraud. The problem is not the elections. We won the damn elections. The problem is we're wasting our opportunity that the voters gave us. And the Republicans are going to pay for that in November. It'll be an absolute shellacking if they don't wake up.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's just outrageous. We control all three branches of government and can't get anything for ourselves. Instead, we're wasting all of that on Israel. I mean, all of it, literally. Trump plans potpourri primetime speech Thursday. Not sure what that means. I guess it means a collection of things. But he will apparently be talking about some of the investigations into voter fraud. He plans to discuss the resumed fighting with Iran, but also election integrity. The president wants to pass the Save America Act, a strict voter ID law that's been stalled in Congress. He may present findings from his intelligence officials about the administrative review of the 2020 election, which Trump won't admit he lost because it was stolen. Meanwhile, more than 200 FBI agents swarm Fulton County, Georgia, to investigate 2020 fraud. In what an FBI memo called a priority investigation, 260 FBI agents are surging to Fulton County, Georgia, to look into possible fraud regarding the 2020 election. The Department of Justice served a subpoena in April for the names and personal contact info for everyone in Fulton County who worked on the 2020 election. The request was slapped down by a judge last week, but that didn't stop the influx of FBI agents descending on Georgia from offices around the nation to look into more than 700 pieces of evidence, including documents, ballots, and tabulation machines, all of which were confiscated in a sweep last January. And let me remind you again, it is not even a debate. We know absolutely for certain, and again, without question, the election was stolen on the basis of nothing other than the fact they changed laws without permission, which is illegal, but they did it anyway. But that's in addition to all of the discrepancies that just prove endlessly what a fraud all of this was. Let's go now to clip number 44. This is State Senator Greg Dolezal talking about what happened in Georgia in 2020.
But we have heard repeatedly that everything was perfect with 2020. In fact, I think we probably at this point could trademark the most secure election in American history. What qualifications we use to measure that, I have no idea. But let's go back to what actually happened in 2020 if we're going to have the conversation. Drop boxes invented out of thin air, nowhere in Georgia law. Mobile voting units moving through Fulton County to 80% Democrat precincts, 81% Democrat precincts to be precise, nowhere envisioned in Georgia law. 6.8 million absentee ballot request forms with a first class stamp sent to every registered voter in the state of Georgia, nowhere envisioned in Georgia law. If you count the same ballots three times, in theory, you should get numbers that match. But that didn't happen either. Let's talk about the recount that happened. 3,930 double scan ballots in Fulton County alone. Thousands of those have been confirmed by the state election board. Governor Kemp actually raised the concerns of the Mancola-Rossi report, and we now know that there were double scan ballots. But even after the ballots were double scanned in Fulton County, did the numbers match on the second recount? Nope. They were still off by 850 ballots. Not one person here can answer the question of how that happened. And that is a legitimate question. We know that ballot images were deleted. We know that test ballots were included in the recount process, and we have that confirmed. But I want to take just a minute and talk about what the Democrats did in response to legitimate questions over the 2020 election. A former constituent of mine, Derek Somerville, former FBI agent, ran data analysis along with another gentleman named Mark Davis. And remember the 6.8 million absentee ballot request forms that were sent out? They had a first-class stamp. So that means if you filed the national change of address form, that was automatically forwarded to your new address. And they identified reasonable cause to question the validity of 39,141 of those ballots that were cast. They knew that 160 people had been registered to vote from a single UPS store, 2,138 people had been registered to vote from one church in Fulton County, 1,391 had been registered to vote from a shuttered 1,000-square-foot building in Fulton County. And lest you think Fulton County has cleaned up their voter rolls, today, thousands of people are registered to vote in Fulton County at UPS stores, storage units, pack mails, homeless shelters that haven't been open for over 5 years. The Fulton County voter rolls have been and continue to be a mess. But when Derek Somerville and Mark Davis followed the law and filed objections to those voters, what did the Democrats do? Well, Stacey Abrams sued him in federal court, and they won. Not Stacey Abrams, but Somerville and Davis won. Judge Jones, not a Republican judge, ruled in their favor. What have we learned since then about those 39,000 voters? 12,000 of them have been removed from the voter rolls because Somerville and Davis were correct that they were no longer eligible to vote. 9,500 have updated their address to a new address outside of Fulton County, proving once again that Somerville and Davis were correct and those people were ineligible to vote. Ultimately, 84% of the votes that of the eligibility that Somerville and Davis challenged were proven to have been invalid voters in the 2020 election. So let's stop this charade of the most perfect, most secure election in history. But more importantly, and I would agree with my colleagues on this, let's look forward to the future elections, and it's darn near past time for Fulton County to clean up their voter rolls.
Incredibly informative stuff. And yeah, I mean, the election was stolen. What else are we supposed to say about it? I mean, they did it right in front of all of us. They did it in abject betrayal of the laws as they stand. You can't just impose things like mail-in ballots. You have to go through the system. They didn't, but nobody stopped them. So I guess it's fine. As Ella Malding says on X, while Dems import tens of millions and elect communists, Republicans are calling Gen Z lazy and debating daylight savings time. When they cry about right-wing policies, right-wingers fold. This is why we lose. It's time to fight back.
Fight for our sovereignty, or to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all at this point middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there's a little bit of a psyop afoot. Where,
oh, I've said that the other day when I had you guys coming on. I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, goes, you're fat. Your own enemy. He does that to guests. It was like Theo Von, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, wasn't really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gained back 10. But now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the globalists are going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, you'll get Masterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the human, with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission, you got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs, that's why it's called the master binder.
But yours is different.
Completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff, it brings in the key sea minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition of as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like this.
Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff, it doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95-plus percent lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of the AlexShipStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexShipStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Yes, we have been momentarily relieved from the attempt to merge Israeli and American militaries. The Senate voted against the NDAA 50-46, denying Israel a merger with the U.S. As Ian Malcolm 84 puts it on X, those 46 who voted in favor should probably face charges for treason, because, of course, this would be the NDAA that would include Section 219, which would be the Israeli merger into American military. That has not been allowed to pass. That doesn't mean it's over by any means. And in fact, it could be as early as later today or tomorrow that this is retabled for consideration. So Senate Majority Leader John Thune switched his vote to a no vote at the end, which was a procedural move. This positions him as a member of the prevailing side to file and call up a motion to reconsider the cloture vote later. He can bring the same motion back quickly, often the next day or shortly after, or after short negotiations, when attendance, timing, or deals improve the chance of hitting those 60 votes. The Senate can try cloture again soon. No vote is guaranteed immediately, but the NDAA is one of these must-pass bills, so leadership will prioritize it. Cloture needs 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. It only got 50 votes, mostly Republican and a few others. Democrats largely opposed it. over concerns like Iran-related provisions, spending, or the attached election measures, that is the Save America Act. Negotiation phase. Expect behind-the-scenes talks, possible amendment deals, or stripping controversial items like the U.S.-Israeli defense tech cooperation provisions in Section 1217 or similar. The House will consider its own version with related Israel tech language, so eventual conference committee reconciliation will iron out the differences. These bills almost always pass the NDAA, often with strong bipartisan support. After amendments and cloture fights, the Senate Armed Services Committee already advanced S-4784. That's the one with 1217, that merger aspect. In short, this was a procedural delay, tactical vote, not the end. The NDAA will likely return for another cloture attempt soon, get debated and amended and advanced, barring major surprises. So I'd say, you know, the focus now needs to be on finding Republicans or Democrats who can make the Israel merger aspect the key point of their opposition. Because if the NDAA has to pass, then you've got some leverage. Like, okay, it has to pass, then you have to make a deal because you have to pass it. And if we're talking about the SAVE Act and we're talking about all this other stuff, it gets a little bit complicated and it may get lost in the mix. But if the Israeli merger aspect is the one thing that Massey and others can stand up against, then that's the thing that'll have to be removed. So right now, you should be calling your senator, especially if they're a Republican, senators and congressmen, and let them know this is the deal breaker. And like I said before, if this passes, I'm voting Democrat. All right? Let them know that. And if enough people say it, you know, they might actually feel the pressure to move on it. And it needs to be about this. I mean, the SAVE Act, it's too late for the midterms. Like, the SAVE Act wouldn't actually impact the midterm. So I'm actually less concerned about the SAVE Act, even though it's obviously an important bill. It's not as important as stopping the merger of the Israeli and American militaries. I don't believe it would affect the midterms at all if we passed the SAVE Act. I'm fairly certain it would take more than a couple months to get some of those things enacted. So, you know, and judges will decide. They'll go, well, you didn't give enough time for the local election people to, you know, apply the new rules. So we'll apply the SAVE Act in the next election. Don't worry about that. So I think it's too late for the SAVE Act. So if we can just focus on this, if it can be like, hey, we love everything in the NDAA, it's just Section 219. It's just Section 1217. It's just the merger with Israel. We get that out of the way. It passes through, no problem. But if that's going to be included, it's got to be a no vote. And we've got to pressure Republicans to stand with Thomas Massey for this no vote, because that is completely and utterly unacceptable. And while I totally understand it and have, you know, to some degree endorsed the idea of not voting Republican as a way to punish them, as a way to remind them that that they cannot depend on us for our vote. And let me say, see if I can say this without giving away anything. I was talking to somebody who's very connected high up with a figure in Republican politics. And let's just say this person that my friend was talking to is the head of a major Republican organization, like the biggest one in the country. And no joke, and like verbatim, my friend was trying to talk to him about, like, well, but aren't you concerned about this? And, you know, the constituents really, you know, prefer this. And the guy said to him, they'll vote for us no matter what. So, like, you know, when you hear Nick Fuentes say, like, we have to withhold our vote, otherwise, you know, they have no reason to do what we ask, and they just assume that they'll have our vote no matter what, so they never feel the need to actually give us anything. That's absolutely true. And I'm sure it's a secondhand source, but the person I was talking to was like, yeah, dude, they literally were like, the people will vote for us no matter what. What are they going to do, vote for the Democrats? They have to vote for us. We can do whatever we want. That's actually how they feel. So I am absolutely in favor of not voting Republican, of making them regret that stance and reminding them that they do not own our vote. They have to actually do literally anything, like something. Like, it doesn't have to be everything, but it has to be one thing at least, and they haven't done a single thing. So we have to remind them of that. However, I've also always said I'm not exactly comfortable voting Democrat because of the policies that would directly impact my life and my family that are poisonous, like transgenderism. You can't just ignore that. As manufactured as the left and right divide is, it's real in certain cases, and that's one of them. So I'm not voting for Democrat unless this passes, unless Section 219 goes through, in which case I'm voting blue. I'm on the donkey team because, like I said, that may be the only way we could possibly undo Section 219, because as much as I despise the Democrats in every other way, they do get things done and they do seem to oppose Israel to a greater degree now. So if this passes, we're going to need Democrats to undo it and then throw everybody in prison for treason that voted in favor of it. Maybe that's something we could all come together on as Americans, I would hope. So anyway, the NDAA has been paused. It's been slowed down for the time being, but it is far from over. So what I want to do now is talk about things, all things that seem somewhat disparate and yet are clearly aligned in their intention. You have things like this. I touched on this a little bit yesterday. New bipartisan bill seeks to outlaw criticism of Israel and Jewish power. This is the Jewish American Security Act, JASA, a piece of legislation that, if passed, would constitute one of the most sweeping attacks on the First Amendment in American history. The bill enjoys practically universal backing from Jewish nonprofits and Zionist activist groups. The new law presents four major demands. One, the appointment of a specialized anti-Semitism commissar to manage the Department of Education's campaign combating pro-Palestinian activism on college campuses. It also includes a $1 billion cash injection to secure Zionist nonprofits and Jewish houses of worship. Mandatory state monitoring of online social media platforms in order to force them to censor anti-Semitic political speech on their platforms, and officially reorienting the mission of the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and National Counterintelligence and Security Centers as instruments for targeting critics of Jews and Israel as foreign enemy actors and domestic terrorists. So that's kind of horrifying, right? And it says, in addition to having an anti-Semitism coordinator micromanage this ongoing war on dissent, JASA calls for a public awareness campaign that will plaster propaganda posters in high-traffic public places such as cafeterias, gymnasium, or student centers, and digitally posting one or more high-traffic institution web pages such as webpage for Student Services Department, warning students and professors about the consequences of partaking in speech and activism that offends Jews or singles out Israel. So this is moving forward and very dangerous. And again, the point where it says they're reorienting the mission of the FBI, DHS, and National Counterintelligence Security Center as instruments for targeting critics of Jews in Israel as foreign enemy actors and domestic terrorists. Now, we've already seen sort of the groundwork for that being laid, which is, again, why I really have trouble believing the Trump administration when they're, you know, asking for billions of dollars for ICE, but they're not deporting anybody. It's like, what are they actually doing? Is this all part of a setup in which criticism of Israel or Jewish people will be made illegal and any outrage about that will be considered enemy military action? And are they not setting us up for a full-on coup of the American people and a takeover by a bunch of hostile foreigners? It seems that way to me. And all of this is what comes to my mind when I hear about the surveillance. I don't even know how to put it, because it's not just the flock cameras. At this moment and simultaneously, all of these various surveillance bills are going forward, whether it's the chat control in Europe, where they get to read your chats before you send them, or, you know, anything happening here with financial surveillance, getting access to your bank account, using big tech to circumvent Fourth Amendment requirements for getting warrants and getting people's information by appealing directly to the server farms that our information is stored on. All over the world, all these surveillance programs are being put into place, and it feels like it's all in preparation for something like the JSA to pass, and then we're in real trouble. So let's go to clip 30 first. This is security researcher Ben Jordan revealing more than we knew before about what these flock cameras are capable of. Let's watch.
Flock license plate readers take a time-stamped photo of every vehicle that passes every camera. Police can search your historical travel information for 30 days.
This creates a searchable database of everyone, not just the suspects of crime.
Security researcher Ben Jordan.
And it's like if you were to build a graph of that sheet, you know, and plot it to a map, now it's as if you've had a GPS on your car for an entire month.
By your own publications, 700,000 crimes a year are solved with Flock?
Flock Safety Chief Communications Officer Josh Thomas.
Reported crimes in America, yeah. So there's a lot more that probably are being helped that aren't being reported. But yes, we have about 700,000 crimes that we are aware of that are being solved in part with evidence that's derived from a Flock Safety device.
In order for that historical data to be of investigative value, you have to track every car for 30 days.
Again, I would challenge you on the word track. Tracking the whole of your movements is very different than knowing that you passed by one specific camera, 24 specific cameras. Those are different things.
And then the examples of tracking that vehicle from location to location to location.
But Flock's own webinars talk about its license plate reader's ability to track vehicles and people.
If you want to know how bad this Flock camera situation is, just watch the first 24 seconds of this video. Flock says its cameras don't track people. Its own training videos say otherwise. I watched this, my mouth literally dropped within 24 seconds. I'll play a little bit more for you, but just this first part is wild. Pay very close attention to when he says, this is a police department and these are all the other agencies and departments that it's sharing its information with. It's mind-blowing. It's literally crazy. Watch this.
In Boulder, Colorado, inside a small coffee shop.
The brighter areas are where the really high density of Flock cameras are.
Will Freeman runs the largest police camera tracking system in the nation.
If you click on any of these police departments, it'll show you who they're sharing with. So the lines going outward are the agencies that can access their data directly.
It's called DFlock. The app shows where the cameras are and which way they're pointed. How many cameras have you mapped?
88,970 cameras at the moment.
Why did you want to do this?
The main reason is to show people how invasive this is.
So it's absolutely invasive, but it gets worse. Let's go to clip 43 here. This is from Next News on X, at Next News. We'll just play a minute or so of it. The full thing's about 16 minutes. Police can search 30 days of your driving history through Flock's camera network. Let's watch.
Next News. Breaking news from the White House. People can search your historical travel information for 30 days. Stop right there. Read that again with me. 30 days. Every car, not a suspect, not a warrant. Every car passing a Flock camera gets logged, time-stamped, mapped, and stored like you work for the regime and owe them your whereabouts. That's the detail that blew the story wide open for me. Then you stack on Houston citizens cutting these things down, LAPD.
All right, so we can take it down. So again, these Flock cameras are abused rather often by police. They can be searched all over the place. They store your information and obviously can build a profile on you. And if there's enough of them, they can track you every second of the day, more or less. They can certainly get, you know, your location, where you're going, where you're headed, who you're meeting with, what you're up to. Incredibly powerful surveillance tool that does not matter if you have a Soros DA. You understand that? It doesn't matter if you have all the cameras in the world. You catch the person. They're on camera committing the crime, but the Soros DA lets them out without bail and then decides they're insane and can't be held to account. Like, it doesn't matter. That's not why these are being built. If the concern was crime, there's about 10 million other things that are easier, cheaper, and more effective than Flock cameras. That is not why the Flock cameras are being built. It's why it's, you know, sharing cat videos on Facebook is not why they're building these data centers. Stopping, you know, people falling asleep behind the wheel is not why they're putting cameras in every single car. This is to track and control the entire human population. It is, these are all the component parts of a giant surveillance prison machine being erected, and it will soon be turned on once fully operational. not to mention, of course, the chat control and everything else. But now let's go to clip 45. Meta has launched a new Facebook that will Meta has launched a new feature that will allow Facebook and Instagram to continually scan all of your information. And like, there's so many things like this. You know, any app you give access to your photos can and will scan it. But Meta is now doing this aggressively. Let's watch.
Facebook is now using AI to scan every single photo and video within your phone. I'm going to show you how to turn it off. This is terrifying. Not only are they scanning those photos and videos, but then they're uploading it to the cloud continuously. It's operating continuously in the background, scanning those photos to figure out the time of day, the location, the other people in your photos, that it can determine what it thinks you should post. I just uploaded a video about how to remove your data and data sharing in another video, and then this is the fresh hell we wake up to. Here's how you're going to turn it off. You're going into your account. At the top left-hand corner, there's going to be three lines. You're going to click that. That's going to open your settings, okay? Then you're going to scroll down to settings and privacy, and when that opens, you're going to click settings. You are scrolling down until you see camera roll sharing suggestions. There's going to be a little camera icon next to it. Click that. When it opens, turn that option off. We aren't done yet. After that, you're going to go back over to your settings and you're going to scroll and look for device settings. Once you find that, you're going to go into it and it's going to ask you if you want to open the device settings within your phone. Say yes, you do. You're going to go in there. You're going to turn off your microphone, or you're going to at least set it to ask every time so that it can't just access it whenever it wants. Same thing for location, same thing for photos and videos. Everything in there, you have to limit the access so that it cannot just go into your phone anytime. I love you so much. Please stay safe. Drink your water. I'll talk to you later.
So Facebook and Instagram both launched this feature. It's called Camera Roll Sharing Suggestions. It uses AI to scan your photos and your videos, and they say it's designed to suggest content for you to post based on time, location, people. Apparently, it's not enabled by default. It is a photo media permission, so it will ask you if you need to opt in. And what it does do is it scans all your photos and videos on device using AI models. But Meta can upload and process that data on their cloud server, so this is where the sketchiness comes in. It's not secretly scanning because you do have to give it in permission by opting in, but it does.
Okay, so again, you know, just another example of more ways that the surveillance network is probing into everything that is you, your photos, your movements, your communications, your network of friends and family. All of this, of course, will be tied to a digital ID that they're rolling out. So you've got the flock cameras, you've got the big tech surveillance, you've got digital ID, chat control in the EU. Every car is being mandated to have surveillance devices in it. And none of it is being used to fight crime. None of it is necessary to fight crime, which is where this video that was posted from Lindsey Graham, you know, after Lindsey Graham's death, clip number 31, I think this is what ties it all in together. Let's watch.
Lindsey Graham is now the talking point now that he's died, and his videos are circulating all over. But there's one video in particular which is really important. The Q Post point to this conversation a number of times, and this is where they were swearing in Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court, who was a threat to this entire snake mafia system. Well, he asks an interesting line of questions.
Talk about the law in war. Is there a body of law called the law of armed conflict?
There is such a body, Senator.
Is there a body of law that's called basic criminal law?
Yes, Senator.
Are there differences between those two bodies of law?
Yes, Senator.
From an American citizen's point of view, do your constitutional rights follow you? If you're in Paris, does the Fourth Amendment protect you as an American from your own government?
From your own government, yes.
Okay.
And it's for this exact post. Look, they are the unlawful enemy combatants. And it's talking about treasonous people against the United States that are citizens versus military law.
Isn't there also a long settled law that it goes back to Eisenstrader case? I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, Johnson versus Eisenstrader.
Right. That American citizens who collaborate with the enemy have considered enemy combatants.
They can be.
This bit, the enemy that collaborated with Nazi saboteurs.
Well, let's talk about can be. I think the
under Supreme Court precedent.
Right. There's a Supreme Court decision that said that American citizens who collaborated with Nazi saboteurs were tried by the military. Is that correct?
That is correct.
infiltration from within, this Nazi snake. And if you listen here...
I think a couple of them were executed.
Yeah.
People executed for treason under military law. These are people that we would not know about. However, for the last 6 years, you do know about a lot of these people that have been treasonous, that have sold out their own country and now hiding in plain sight as a patriot. This is what this is explaining. Once you've committed treason, there's no turning back from that. But now we're playing catch up, so the people are waking up to it. Listen.
So if anybody doubts, there's a long-standing history in this country that your constitutional rights follow you wherever you go, but you don't have a constitutional right to turn on your own government, collaborate with the enemy of the nation. You'll be treated differently.
And then there's this post. Look, interesting line of questions. Normal, military law versus criminal law. This is so important because there's so many people that have been treasonous to America. So many gatekeepers that you follow are all part of this system where they sold out. They had a plan. This is why you're hearing about Iran so much. This all comes up to that head of the snake. Islam, Nazis, communists.
Right, forget this guy. This guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like a QAnon person, whatever. Do you actually understand? Can you see the important part of what's being laid out here? And I do think that 3 years ago, whenever that happened with Brett Kavanaugh, but 6 years ago or whenever it was, I think that was in line with everything else that we're seeing. This is laying the groundwork. We've heard talk about, you know, stripping citizenship from people so they can be deported. At the same time, we're hearing that, you know, opposing Israel is essentially treason. People are being deported for opposing Israel. What do you think happens if our militaries merge with Israel? Do you think anti-Israel sentiment will be treated as making you an enemy combatant? I see all these things coming down the pipe and aligning perfectly with each other. All the censorship, all of the surveillance, the digital ID, the safety for the Jewish American Safety Act, which says, I remind you, it will reorient the mission of the FBI, the DHS, National Counterterrorism Security Center, as instruments for targeting critics of Jews in Israel as foreign enemy actors and domestic terrorists. I think that's what they're setting up. I think they're setting it up to where they're merging the American and Israeli militaries so that anybody who opposes Israel will be treated as a domestic terrorist enemy combatant. They'll lose constitutional protections and they'll use ICE and the Flock cameras and the surveillance network to round up anybody who opposes Israel's murderous, genocidal Greater Israel project here in America. Maybe I'm the paranoid one, but better safe than sorry, right? We better free ourselves before the jail cell door shuts once and for all.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow, the methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.